Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you doing, Dr. Paul?
Doing well. So, I'm going to have a little introduction, but I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
So you better be ready.
I'll get ready.
Now, we want to talk about the CDC, our favorite organization. I've been applying for a job there, but they said I'm not qualified.
You're a doctor. That's why.
I said, well, I think even if you did offer me a well-paying job, I'm not interested. So, but they came out with a report again. You know, they started all this trouble, basically, and Fauci was involved, and Bill Gates was involved, and from their viewpoint, they've accomplished a whole lot, you know, in a negative sense. But they came out yesterday and said that second wave looks like it's here. And they're even saying that just in Texas, there will be 200,000 deaths.
Or in the U.S., yeah.
Yeah, in the U.S. And that's a significant increase by October.
By October.
So there's second wave. That's it.
Here it is.
And the question I have that you can address when you get a chance is, can we trust what Fauci says? You know, is this worthwhile information from him? Because he might be fibbing or whatever, but you can give me your opinion of that. But this is the effort to continue this whole process of fear and keep it going because they were running out of an enemy. And who knows, maybe these rioters against the police, they might run out of steam too because they're really over the top. And let's hope the American people are a little bit more savvy than buying into this. I think they were more likely to buy in the fear that it was presented to them about an infection, you know, and they sort of went along with it. But this whole idea of defunding the police, of course, there's a lot of police we admitted we'd like to defund because the real police is not located in our local community. The real police that give us harm are the ones that are in D.C. And anybody that wants to enforce big government has to use police. And when you look at the police that you should be concerned about, look at the size of government. And the size of government is huge. So we have a lot of police. I mentioned the other day there's 120,000 federal police that carry guns. So they are concerned that they won't have an enemy, but they work hard at it. So if the police, I don't know when they'll run out of that because they're testing that already. You know, I think it's up in Seattle. They say, oh, let's see what it's like. Let's not have a police. And I don't know if that's working out all that well. So we'll see. And why don't you help us out a little bit and tell us about what we should believe and what we should not believe from the CDC.
Well, it's not just the CDC because it's the media. They love this. And they were distracted for a couple of weeks with all the rioting, and they were hoping that would get everyone amped up. And that's kind of died down. So now go back to the tried and true. Russiagate is gone. Obamagate is gone. Ukrainegate is gone. You got to ramp up the fear. Let's look at a couple of JPEGs, Dr. Paul. This will tell you what you need to know. This is Bloomberg. Second U.S. virus wave emerges as cases top 2 million. Not about whether it's happening or it might be happening, it's here. And there's the next one, too. This is interesting, the next JPEG about, look at this one. This is from NPR. U.S. hits 2 million coronavirus cases as many states see a surge of patients. And if you look at this for a second, that's a real propaganda picture because you have this very alarmist headline over a picture of some normal people on their bicycle going about their lives. Welcome back. We're now open. They're in front of a restaurant. And the juxtaposition of this alarmist title with people enjoying themselves, I don't think is an accident, Dr. Paul. I think they're letting you know, in a not so subtle way, hey, you better not be out there enjoying yourself. You better not be having fun. But here's something from the Bloomberg piece, which is the first one. It turns up the fear early on, up, you know, above the fold. A second wave of coronavirus is emerging in the U.S., raising alarms as new infections push the overall count past 2 million Americans. So it's happening. But then you kind of scroll down, you know, as you scroll down these articles, you start getting a little bit more truth. You scroll down past the fear propaganda. In Georgia, where hair salons, tattoo parlors, and gyms have been operating for a month and a half, case numbers have plateaued, which means this. flummoxing experts. The experts are flummoxed. How dare you not be having more cases and more deaths? There's also, curiously, no spikes in states where they've had massive protests and looting because, of course, Corona does not attack looters or rioters, as we well know.
You know, the former director, Commissioner of FDA, Scott Gottlieb, spoke out. And I think his position was basically, no, this is probably not a second wave, but it's just a continuation of a first wave. I'm not sure that they know exactly what they're talking about, because I've never been convinced exactly how you measure first waves and second waves, and maybe the statisticians have a way of doing it. The big thing is it should be just bored on how many people are sick and need a doctor and why, and keep out of politics. Once it gets politicized, distorted, like you point out, by the media, you know, there's a lot of confusion, and then there's ulterior motives, there's secondary motives, and they use it to have, you know, maybe move their agenda. And there's a lot of people out there, especially when it came to this police business. This is sort of the arm of Marxists, cultural Marxists, and the political Marxists.
Yeah, you know, actual Marxists.
It's a whole system, and it seems like it's invited. You know, this whole idea of, well, we're going to change the system, and if we don't like to make a point that there's bad people out there, and they've been around for a long time, we'll just tear down their monuments. We won't have it, because we only want perfect people who are dedicated to peace and prosperity and helping people and freedom and liberty. No, anybody who comes close, they're one of the first ones to get knocked down.
Over. Yeah, it's true. Well, they do need this, the second wave. It's very important to the propaganda. But when you dig down a little, Bloomberg coming back to them, in Texas, they reported a 4.7% increase in hospitalizations. Wow, 4.7% increase. As you said yesterday, how do they know these aren't people who have had their surgeries put off, who've had to have knee replacements or chemotherapy? It doesn't say. And interestingly enough, this next one, if you look at New York Times JPEG, second wave NYT, this is what the New York Times, this is the graphics they put in an article where they're talking about new spikes in the second wave. Does that look like a second wave, Dr. Paul? It looks kind of like that first wave is dying out. Now, of course, we may be wrong. It's always possible. But the headlines, again, don't match the statistics. And what's interesting, in Florida, which has opened up to a degree, its health department said that it attributes the increase in cases, which that's one of the spike states that they're talking about. It attributes the increase in cases to, quote, greatly expanded efforts in testing, while noting that the positivity rates remain very low, around 5.5%. So that's when you dig down into these articles. More testing equals more cases. That's just logic. But the rate of positivity is actually reducing.
Yeah, and I think the people recognize this, too. I think the average person now think it's less dangerous than they were told, and they want to come out of hibernation. They want to get out, and lo and behold, just give them a chance, and before that you know it, they take their mask off before they were told they were allowed.
Yeah.
And it's just happening. But the other thing is that... there was an overreaction to the fear mongering, and they said that, you know, caused financial problems and economic problems. And it did. It added a lot of trouble to it. But like I've said many times, the basic flaw there is the distortion by our Federal Reserve and the malinvestment and debt and all these other things trying to make a correction. But nevertheless, when the stock market goes down, they have to be very cautious. When it was having this pseudo recovery that we just had a few weeks ago, they say, oh, well, maybe we can back off a little bit because we want to get away from this. But now the market is down again. The market's down over 1,000 points today, and they sort of need to keep this going, and they need to, you know, keep scaring people. And when they do that, they're reacting to the market because right now they don't need that. So, you know, managing two issues that are supposed to scare the people, it gets a little bit difficult because there's too many players involved. There's economic players and bank and politician, and it gets a little bit confusing. So it might help us in the sense of they're so confused, the American people are starting to realize that they're getting confusing information, and they themselves are sick and tired of it all. And the governors, they've even been expressing they're getting tired of this too.
Yeah.
And even the bad ones, but I think the complications have overwhelmed them, and they're backing down, and they're not getting ready to jump on the bandwagon and say, second wave, let's go put the sanctions back on.
Yeah.
That would even discredit them even more so. But that's exactly what Fauci is doing. He said, second wave, can we restore a little bit of sanity here? We want you in your houses again.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But hopefully sanity returns. And like it's been said, the sanity returns very slowly,
very
one
slowly.
Person at a time. But I think it's happening.
It's happening. And you're right. New Jersey, talk about the bad governors. New Jersey, even, he had to say, I'm rescinding the stay-at-home order. Of course, when you look at the fine print, there's all kinds of restrictions. You can only have 3 people in your restaurant and all sorts of things. But the other thing about these spike states that I find curious is, again, when you look at some of the details, what the headlines say and what actually is occurring doesn't really go together very well. And in fact, if we have that next, here's an interesting thing. California is one of the spike states, we're told. And actually, let's go to the next one if you don't mind. California is one of the next one after that, please. Spike states. And this is interesting because California, as you know, is one of the first states to lock down everything. Everything was locked down. Now it's opened up a little bit, some of it by force, because people were not going to stay away from the beaches. So what happened? There's, quote, a spike in L.A. County. They're saying, is this the second wave? But this is something interesting, Dr. Paul. Here is the public health director for L.A. County, Barbara Ferrer. She says, we're not at the tail end of anything. We never had a huge peak. We've been kind of within this band. We're not in decline. We're kind of holding our own. And basically, that's what they said they were going to do all the time. They didn't have a peak, and then it's coming back again. They basically, when they say flatten the curve, it just lengthened the amount of time that the normal thing would happen, which is that people would get infected with this disease, get over it, and then pass on the immunity, et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty interesting when you look at beyond the headlines about the spikes.
Well, you know, Texas got in the news because of this spike.
You yeah.
know, some of the numbers were showing the tremendous number of new cases. But I think our governor has learned a lesson. You know, he's sort of saying, yeah, we don't have to go back on any more of these regulations, and we got to get back to work. And he also said that, you know, we still have to, you know, do all those very important things. But these hot spots have been around, but they're gimmicks. Now, even in Texas, the hot spots are nursing homes, jails, and also in the meat packing
yeah.
plant. So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of, you know, they've been around. It's almost like if this, I have to be careful what I say, because if I compare the coronavirus to a cold virus, oh, he's belittling it. This is a severe cold virus.
Yeah.
But that's what happens, you know, and some people, you know, when they work closely with people over the years, if you have a bad cold or you don't want to be exposed, you know, that sometimes people just back off from it. But I know this is worse than that, but the principle's about the same. And yet we get over these cold virus. We get over influenza.
Yeah.
And influenza, I think when you add up all the statistics, a lot more people will have died in the past 10 years from influenza than many, many diseases. It's still around, and just think of tuberculosis. It's still a very serious disease. But one thing that I've been thinking about on, you know, they say the elderly are vulnerable. If they have other illnesses, mm-hmm. more vulnerable. Kids are okay. And I agree with that. But they always talk about the elderly, weakened immune system, and they're in a nursing home. But what they don't talk about, some I'm sure they have, but I'd be interested in having a list of all the medications
yeah.
that people take when they're in nursing homes, because I think combination of medications can be very beneficial, a little of this and a little of that, and it works better than if you take, you know, a much more opioid to get
yeah.
pain relief. So they do this, but I think there's someday, if they ever figure it out, they're going to find out that something that they've been taking, maybe any of it,
yeah.
you know, decreases their immune system. You don't have to have, you know, a stroke or severe diabetes or anything. Maybe it's a medication. Maybe it's a sedative that makes them more vulnerable rather than just writing off old people. You know,
yeah, yeah.
that's a risky thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. The attitude is they have it coming. It's terrible. But, you know, I remember back working in D.C., I was always crowding into the metro, and you got a lot of colds, you got a lot of flus, you got over it, it was just kind of annoying. But, you know, the thing about Texas, and I'm looking for what could be the reasons for this spike, for this claimed spike. And here's something else I saw, and this is going to be a little tricky because we need to actually go back one from the JPEG we had on. This is about the false positives in Texas. But this is interesting, Dr. Paul. Some coronavirus tests in doubt in Texas after lab turns up abnormal number of positives. And this is happening throughout Texas. This isn't just in this one occurrence. And this might explain a lot because you've always been pretty suspicious that these tests are being fudged as well. But so this company is no longer being allowed to test because every test they came out with basically was positive. And this is from that article that I put up the headline. This is interesting too. It's not clear whether all the lab's test results will be thrown out from the state tallies or just a portion. So that means all of these fake positives are in the tally now. Maybe that's the spike. They're running around testing people with positives. Here's something from that article. That's from the Dallas Morning News. They reported tests in a nursing home in West Texas in Scurry County, where state-run tests found 39 positives in this senior home. Nobody had any symptoms, so they went back and tested them again. They were all negative. And this happened again in Eastland County and Panola County. The same thing was happening where they would go back and test them, and they actually weren't positive, but it was being thrown into the positive new cases, which would enable the scare thing. So I wonder, how prevalent is this? Maybe it's anecdotal, but maybe it's more prevalent.
Right, and I think there's a lot to be said about the fatigue that people are experiencing right now. And that means they're weakening on their fears that have been driven to them, you know, in the last 3, 4, 5 months. And they are now just stepping out. And it's almost like a delight that they got out of their house and can go places. And the planes are starting to fly. It's very difficult. I'm not even tempted to get on an airplane again. But,
yeah.
But it's better than it was. And this is, I think, the fatigue that's happening, which means people do end up with common sense. It takes a long time, though, and that's why I keep thinking if we have any merit in what we try to do is that we try to warn people, don't wait for all the pain and suffering. And that always bothered me over the years my experience, in the 60s about the Vietnam War and all, and then finally seeing some people, you know, finally standing up after going along as a mob to support the war. And finally, the people said, no more, no more. They started, demonstrations were a lot worse in the 60s. But in a way, you don't like any of the violence and property damage. But in a way, they were campaigning against a very, very stupid war. And where thousands of our people were died because we drafted them and put it in. And you talk about discrimination.
Yeah.
You know, back then, the minorities suffered much more than that. That's the kind of violence that we should be talking about. This idea of what they're talking about now on the violence, the violence comes from government, and it comes when they do things like fight wars, draft young people up black, white, and whatever color, and they're forced into doing it. But people finally did wake up. The war was too much because Johnson's slogan was guns and bugger. It almost reminds you of what's going on now.
Yeah.
You don't need to cut any spending. We can keep the welfare state going forever. We can take care of the banks and the business community forever. And we also can have the strongest military in the world, and we can be prepared for 3 fronts around the world at one time if we need to. And just think, the militarism still goes on. I haven't seen any real reductions in the military spending. It's going up. So this is something that the people have to wake up on, and demand that they want their freedom back. And you know what? Just gentle, polite confrontation with the police and saying, you know, sir, you don't have a right to do this.
Yeah.
We have a constitutional right to go to church. You don't have a right to do this. And they said, where is the law? There is no law that gives you permission to lock me up into my house or say that we can't meet in a church. And, you know, most of the policemen will listen. And locally, they've had great success, you know, and say, and the police all of a sudden, You know, that makes sense. That's a lot better than the police joining the rioters,
yeah,
like they're doing.
On
you
their
see,
knees.
And then getting rid of the police and say, oh, we'll become a rioter. We want to join the gang because they're on the side of righteousness. That's where we go wrong.
Yeah, the thing you point out exactly what happened with these Park Patriots here in Brazoria County. They talked to the police officer and said, what law are you enforcing? Well, he couldn't answer it. He went back and talked to his chief and said, okay, go ahead and play in the park. Interesting. But going back to propaganda, NPR propaganda, remember that picture? It was so powerful with the you know, incendiary title and then the people on their bikes. You better not enjoy yourself. If we go to the next couple of pictures, this is Houston just a few days ago. There's a couple of pictures from Houston a couple of days ago. And this is what happened when people got together, understandably upset. This is the funeral of George Floyd. You have a lot of people there. And let's go to the next picture, too. They're crowded in. They're crowded in close. But you never see the NPR putting up something about in criticism of this kind of gathering. It's always a couple of people on a bike going to a restaurant. You know, and it's awfully disturbing, and it is propaganda. But going back to the title, because we talked about this, are we being a little too mean to the CDC? Are we being a little too mean to Fauci? Well, go to the next picture, and people have seen this, I'm sure, but this is why we're harsh about people like Fauci, if we can go to that second to last picture. Because Fauci says he wears a mask to be a symbol of what you should be doing. And this is a quote from him. It's not, you got to do it or you'll die, you're going to hurt someone, you're going to kiss. No, I do it as a symbol to show you what you should be doing. It goes back to what we said yesterday, submission. And this, I think, is a kind of a lie. Because the implication is you better do it or you're going to kill people. He's just saying it's a symbol.
You know, I keep thinking of it being a symbol, and I think it is. But the symbol that I envision is that a year or two or 10 years or sometime in our history, people are going to go back and watch the mobs having all these masks on and all this distancing and all the silly things that have been done. And they're going to say, well, what were these people thinking? Were they delusional? And it is based on a delusion in many ways. They're deluded into believing there's great danger because they're in authority, you know. People need more confidence in their own decent thinking, you know, common sense. And we've seen that in the media or from people making a point. You know, common sense would help us out a whole lot because it would rule this out. That's how, you know, wars are, and common sense becomes awakened.
Yeah.
But it's hard to awaken them to danger because you and I worked hard about trying to talk about why we don't need to be in the Middle East and we don't need to believe that Hussein was Hitler,
yeah,
and that he was about to bomb us with a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
You know, but it didn't happen. Mainly, what did we have to contend with? A monopolized media,
yeah,
and the zombies in Congress who said we need to do it because you know we're threatening our liberty. We need to protect our constitutional freedom.
That's
we
right.
need to send the troops over there. A few people may die, but they're there to protect our liberties. That always made me ill that they,
yeah,
were going over there. They lose their lives or their limbs, and they're protecting our liberties. And look at it. We're less free and poorer, and nothing was achieved by that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do, since it's Thursday, I'm going to bring back my segment of Villain of the Week. And this time it's personal, but it also goes with what we're saying. And if we can put up that last picture. This is my Villain of the Week, Dr. Paul. It happens to be the president of Texas A&M University. Here we are, basically through it in Texas. It was not anything even remotely close to a regular flu season in Texas in terms of people who died. But Michael Young, the president of Texas A&M University, on Tuesday put out new guidelines for students returning to school in the fall. In the fall, one of the guidelines, you must wear a face mask at all times. All individuals, faculty, staff, students, and visitors in all indoor areas and outdoor spaces where there's not enough room to have a 6 feet between you. And if you've ever been on the campus there, it's almost impossible. It's packed full of kids. It's 80,000 people. I don't know how many thousand people. You have to have at least 3 face coverings that you can use throughout the week to begin each day with a new face covering. The policy will be granted on a case by case. So over and over, and what they're going to have is they have a task force. And here's how it was done actually in our local college, I've heard. They have a task force that goes into classes 2 or 3 times per class period just checking to see if everyone has a mask on. If you don't, they point you out, say, put it on. So they're going to go through disrupting these classes and doing it. This is really awful. It's really terrible. It's terrible for the students. It's terrible for freedom. It's a terrible lesson. And I think one of the things, you know, when Hidalgo up in Harris County said everyone wear a mask, Greg Abbott, to his credit, said, no way. We're not going to enforce this. You've stepped over. It's a bridge too far. It would be nice if Abbott took a look at this horrible policy at A&M and said, this is a state university. No, this is not going to fly. Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. You know, the a lot of people ask the question, how did this all get started? How did we get this far along and all of a sudden see the economy collapsing, coronaviruses, street riots, police under attack? How did it all happen? Is it just sort of few bad apples stir it up the trouble and the people go along and there's too much go along stuff? It's not exactly that way. It's much more understandable because I think all this activity reflects an attitude. It's an attitude that's been pervasive, not in the last 6 months, not in the last year, not under President Trump, not under Obama, but the universities have been infested with a terrible, terrible virus of authoritarianism. And it probably started wholesale in the Depression. And the universities were taken over. And that is where the real violence is organized. And they sit back and write these papers and tell people why they have to do certain things. And they end up, you know, hating America's liberty. And they organize. So what people are doing now is a reflection of what they heard their professors say. And sometimes you think some of the conservative universities should be a little better than that, but it's all except for the few. And, of course, it's available. But it's the education and its ideas that people endorse. This is one of the reasons that for long term that I think it's important is that people consider alternative education. Yeah, there's a lot of questions. Do we want to go back to the public schools and things? Some people don't have much of a choice. But basically, there's alternatives available. There's private schooling. There's homeschooling available that will teach something else other than what those liberal Marxist-type professors teach in about 90% or more of the schools. And that is where the tragedy is. That's where it started. But, yes, we'll deal with the individual issues of coronavirus and police brutality and these things like this as a particular issue. But overall, it's the authoritarianism that is preaching and indoctrinating a whole society through our university system, almost all of them paid by taxpayers funding. There are very few, very private schools, and if you can pick out six of them, guess what? They don't take any government money. So this is a story that people should know about, and if we want to protect our children and protect our future, they have to know and understand our history and what liberty is all about. The government is supposed to be there to protect our liberties to make these decisions. It's not there to provide free education and free medical care and take care of us and fight wars to protect our freedom by sending our kids off to die. That is not the purpose of government. And our government is out of control. And now our civil operations now, it's out of control too. There's civil strife in this country. And when you take an oath to obey the Constitution against enemies, foreign, yes, we should. We don't want to invade it. And domestic, that's where we better pay attention to, because it's the domestic terrorisms that, and their thinking process that comes out of our university that is a real problem to us. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please return soon.